Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this week's episode of Game Cabinet. This week, we're opening up and watching those pretty stars fly by as we talk about Cosmic Encounter. This is actually one of my favorite games to play, and I had to take some coercing of one of my cohorts to give it another try, and I hope that they had a lot better of a chance this time.
But I guess we'll have to stay tuned to find out.
Oh, man!
Oh, man!
Cosmic Encounter is one of those board games of a lot of social deduction slash politics. Lots and lots of politics. Lots and lots. Anywhere from 3 to 6 players are given alien superpowers, more or less, and are sent out to conquer the rest of the galaxy, i.e. your fellow players. Objective is to reach a score of 5 planets and have officially become the superpower of the galaxy. With that, combatants can go through combat. They can negotiate peace treaties and such like that. And there are lots of politics that go into the beforehand of all of these things. And it is just chock full of magnificent powers and unique abilities to keep the game very fresh. George, what were your opinions upon the getting into it?
So I had played Cosmic Encounter, God, it must have been like 7 or 8 years ago. It was a long time ago. And I played it in a group of people. I think it was one friend that I play games with pretty frequently, and then a few people that I didn't know who were also friends with my friend. So, you know, just gotten a few people together.
Yeah, friend of a friend.
Yeah. Didn't love it that time. I was definitely, not knowing the people that you're playing with. The game is designed so that you get into your turn, and there's a bit of a random kind of a draw on who you're having your cosmic encounter with for that turn.
The deck of destiny.
Yeah. And there is, like, once in a while, there's a little bit of choice involved, but more often than not, you'll draw the card and you'll have an encounter with the person that you're directed to do that with. When you know everybody you're playing with, it's wonderful, like in a family setting or just with friends. And it was such a just a one-off thing that it was randomly with a few people I didn't know that, you know, then you're like,
it's meant a little harder to be like, hey, forget you, man.
Yeah,
I don't care about you. I'm coming for your planet.
Well, and like you said, there's some of that social deduction going on. So with these people that you don't know, if you're not as comfortable with, like, you know, lying to fresh faces and things like that, I mean, I know it's part of the game and you should just get over that, but it's a weird little social block that I have.
No, it was weird my first couple times, too, of being like, I mean, I kind of know you guys. Like, I'd played games with them the first time I'd played with the group. Mm-hmm. But I still understand that where you're like, well, do I tell them I'm playing a negotiate and just attack him instead and be that guy? Like, will that ruin it for the future games?
Right, right.
No one will trust you ever again.
So
that does happen.
But flash forward, you know, years and years later to a couple weeks ago when we played, and the experience of doing, you know, that style of game where you do have a bit of a directed exchange with somebody by the game, it's a lot nicer when you are friends with or family with, you know, the people you're playing with, because then you can kind of lie to them and not feel quite as bad about it or whatever it is, or, you know.
Yeah, and you know what kind of play group you're playing with at that point, too.
Right,
like, you're
right.
Like, oh, you guys are ridiculously honest with each other, even when you shouldn't be. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I can play with that. That's fine. Whereas our group of misfits is like, nope, you cannot trust a word coming out of our mouths when we play.
Well, and it was delightful because there was that moment where Kyle was lying through his teeth saying that he was definitely not lying, and he had not been lying the last couple of times he'd been called on it, and you were just like, no, he's lying, he's totally full of crap, and you were right, he definitely was lying for the first time, and he got caught in the act, and it was delightful because, you know, there's that interpersonal kind of like, oh, no, I know your game, I know what you're doing right
now.
Yeah,
I see what you're going with. You're not going to play that and then bluff that card.
So the options are you can go into these encounters and you can actively fight each other and try to win based on your combat score, which there are different cards in the game that range from 0 all the way up to like 30, I think. 30 or 40 or even higher, maybe.
I think there's a 40, and I think there might be a 50 and 60, but those high-end cards are
real thin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but then there's, you know, the negotiation part where you both are, you know, still having your own cards, of which I think you have like 6 to 8 cards or so in hand, depending on what you're... And out of those cards, you'll have different combat cards, which will have different numbers on them, little combat tricks or things that you can do to help either other people's encounters when you're not involved or give yourself a little bonus for your own. Or you can play the negotiate card, which means that you have some kind of a peaceful discourse. Or if your opponent plays a combat card when you've played a negotiate card, then they effectively lose.
Yeah.
So it's basically, there's little ways and little tricks and shenanigans that you can pull where you can actively kind of straight up lie to the person you're having the encounter with and then, you know, follow up with some, you know.
Which I did. What did I need? 1 planet, 2 planets left. Mm-hmm. And I convinced Kyle to play negotiate and straight up played like a 2
mm-hmm.
because I knew I'd be enough to win. But when you do things like that, I had to pay a compensation for being aggressive. D-bag. Mm-hmm. So it became one of those, okay, well, here's a few cards for that planet. I'm willing to take that.
So it's, and then like you said right off the bat, there's the, I mean, God, there's got to be more than 20, maybe 30 or so different alien races that you'll pick a different one generally every time you play.
There are 50 in just the base box that we were playing out of, not to include, let's see, I got a list of at least another 100 here.
I don't mean to jump the gun.
No, you're absolutely fine. That's one of the... These are just for reference points.
Fair enough.
But no, they have like 5 expansions now out for it. I think the 5th edition one has... It at least has the incursion patch brought in because it has the orange little ships for it, essentially.
Okay. Gotcha.
But there are 2 more that add up to 2 more players, so you can get up to a total of 9 players, which I want to play this game with 9 people.
That's crazy.
That would be a lot of fun. And you'd feel a little less targeting. Like, we played a full 4, and it still kind of feels like you might pick on somebody just because of how the Destiny deck flips, you know, oh, I hit 3 reds in a row. But it also makes it nice because you know that you're not in the rest of the deck.
Yep, yep.
I mean, maybe when the world calms down, we can do an employee game night and mass game of cosmic encounters.
That'd be really rad because there's like, if you add all 6 of the expansions, there's another 145. So with the base box, that brings it to 195 aliens for you to choose from.
That's a lot of choices.
Yeah. The nice thing, though, about that is that all of them have these wonderful green, yellow, and red lights, easy, medium, and hard. I don't always agree with them because I played Virus, who is technically a hard alien species to play with. How normal combat goes is George and I are in combat. He throws down a 4. I throw down a 4. Well, now we count our ships and we add those to it. Mine, on the other hand, for Virus, you multiply it. That's not that hard of a power. I don't necessarily agree with that being a hard alien to kind of understand. Just as long as you put 2 ships down, double it. You know, it's pretty easy in my opinion. But you can also go through and sift out these green, yellow, red ones and pick, okay, well, since most of the people at the table are new, we're going to pick just these green ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody's dealt 2 blind anyway. So that helps kind of also keep the mix up going.
Yep. Which it makes for incredible replay value because every time you sit down, I mean, even if you end up playing it a lot, eventually, like, you, there's going to be dozens, if not, I mean, God, whatever math equation would, you know, figure out if you had a 5-person game with 50 different races, how many different combinations of alien races and powers and things you can have at the table at the same time. I mean, it's probably in the hundreds, I would have to imagine, just doing a quick...
I think the only reason I'm so well-versed in the aliens in that game, one, I've played it a good chunk. It became a good part of our regular weekly gaming for a while. But on top of that, I got lucky and got to play Reincarnation a couple of times, which super rare to get an alien multiple times. But I took it both times because it's one of those ones that if you lose an encounter, you go get another alien power.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
That's fine.
And that's your whole thing is that, like, when you grab that card, you go look, you grab another one, and then when that one dies, you pull another flare and keep going through the deck of flares and picking up new aliens as you go through because you're being reincarnated constantly. And
that's cool.
It's super fun, but it gave me a chance to get really deep into some of the aliens.
Nice.
But other than that, I don't think, without that and playing it so much, I don't I would not know the repertoire of those aliens nearly as well. I really like the game, so I guess I've spent a little time reading outside. But
yeah.
I have no clue what the other 145 powers are, though. I can't believe that they came up with 145 more powers.
Well, and they make them feel so unique, and like the flavor and the style, like, you know, your viruses, you know, make your guys multiply. You
yeah.
know? And then there were, I mean, with all the other ones, like Kyle was playing this real sneaky one where he doesn't actually have to reveal his card. And if you want to call him out on his lie, you can look at the card and make him prove it. But if you were wrong about him being a liar, then you suffer the consequence.
Yeah, then he instantly wins. Right. He didn't lie to you.
Mm-hmm.
One of my other favorite ones is Looser. Looser, after cards are picked, but before they're revealed, you can choose to activate their power. And if you do, the loser wins and the winner loses. And so I've seen lots of dudes just whip out a negotiate card, wait for the person to play one, and then be like, cool, I activate my power.
Mm-hmm.
If you play a combat card, I'm winning here. And so, like, that's a crazy fun one. Oh, we didn't get to see him, but Mirror is a really fun one. You get to flip the numbers on your combat cards.
Oh, okay.
And there are, and on top of all of this, there are variants to the game that they came out with right off the bat. Multi-alien, which is fun, which Mirror and Virus are one of the dumbest combos you can get doing that. Like, absolutely, period. Being able to be like, okay, this 9 is now a 90, and I have 4 ships on there. You got, there's nothing to go against that. You're like, okay, yep, that's where we're at then. All right. But there's hidden powers where you keep your power as hidden as possible. And even if there were triggers for it, you just ignore it because you haven't discovered your power yet, essentially. And then play it out when you want to. And these are things that are just coming right out of the box. I guess then again, they are on like their third or I guess when I started playing it, they were on their third or fourth rendition. And now they're on like their fifth. And I think that's kind of where they're content with it for a minute.
So we do have more copies of it finally coming back into stock for the first time in a while. And I think if I'm not much mistaken, the most current one that we had access to was the 42nd anniversary edition.
Yeah.
For those of you Douglas Adam fans possibly out there, you know,
yep.
Wink, wink, nod, nod.
Nice.
Nudge, nudge.
I appreciate that they did that out of all things. I was like, all right, well played, well played.
I mean.
But that seems to be the edition they're going to be going with for a while. Just because I was looking, trying to look a little deeper, see if there were any plans for anything new. And they're pretty much like, no. This big anniversary edition, we'll keep making it, but I don't think they're going to keep, like, I don't think there's going to be a new add-on to it. I think they've kind of expanded what they can at that.
It's a card game.
It's a card game.
Okay.
Ish.
Ish.
Ish. It's got a few little, like, ships and stuff to help for markers and stuff, but it's a card game.
Okay. So the point is to take over planets.
Yep.
So you would have your specialty cards, like your alien race or whatever,
yep.
And then you have attack cards?
Then you have a handful of, like, 7 cards that range from flares to essentially interrupt is kind of the best way to put it, like cosmic zaps and like essentially just kind of specialty cards. I think that's what they're called, specials.
So you draw a hand of 7 cards, you play a card, do you draw another card at that point? Like, is it one of those games where you play and you discard and
no.
you draw, or you just go through your hand?
You play until your hand is out.
Ooh.
And then you draw, unless your alien or something else tells you to do.
Okay.
Otherwise.
I'm trying to get a feel for the, like, mechanics of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So essentially,
sorry.
A player's turn will be, we'll say it's turn 1. You have your, I think it's 8 cards. I think 7 or 8. One of the two.
I think you're right. There's your 5 planets that you have all your ships on, which is your starting home base. And then you're trying to go take your ships and put them onto other people's planets and colonize the other people's planets.
Okay. And you've got 20 ships. That's another important thing. You've got kind of a limited amount of resources. So essentially, I get my start my turn. I pull off the Destiny deck and it says attack Hannah.
Okay.
So I take my little warp gate. I point it at a planet of yours that I decide I want to go to. Primarily, the only thing that picking planets does for the attacker is making sure you don't put it on a planet I already own, because otherwise nobody's going to score 5 points.
Right.
Because everybody will be like, nope, you can just keep attacking this one planet. It's fine. Really, it's your planet anyway. But so I get to pick where I want to go, and then we enter into alliances, which is a really dope part of the game, which almost immediately starts your politicking and like swaying of the group, essentially, because the attacker can offer up for alliances and see if anybody wants to join them.
This has got to be the main reason that it's not a 2-player game, very specifically.
Well, that and you just constantly be attacking each other's planets anyway.
Right.
But they have made cosmic duels for
indeed.
That, for that purpose. I have no clue how that's played. I kind of took a small peek at it, and it looks really fun, but it looks different.
Fair enough.
I think it looks more like you're supposed to be racing the other to like explore more planets out in the world.
So you would attack my planet, and you'd go, "Hey, George, do you want to enter into an alliance with me to attack Hannah's planet?"
Yeah, and George could be like, "No, you suck. You're smelly. I don't want to." And I could be like, "Okay, that's fair." And then you get to be like, "Hey, alliances." And George is like, "Yeah, I have played with Drew and he boned me in the last one, so I'm going to do everything I can to not help him." And he can be like, "I'm going to help you."
Game memory is a real thing.
Yeah, and so he can take up to 4 of his ships, which is how many you're allowed to attack and defend with, essentially. There are a few aliens that you kind of combined, like amoeba.
Yeah.
You can combine a bunch of your ships and send a whole flock of them out, which is really cool. And then we go into combat, where I select either an attack card or a negotiate card, and we can even talk about it beforehand, being like, "I know you have 8 ships over there, but I've got something to help me on my end, to push me over." So we could go about this in a diplomatic way and both play negotiate cards, and let's just trade a planet. You know, it's round 1, we can both score a point right off the bat, victory is ours.
But then you can also, like, go back on your word.
And then I could totally be lying to you, get you to play a negotiate, and then play down a combat card and win. Or hold to my negotiations and be like, "All right, no, I won't lie to begin with. I'm normally pretty okay with that." Being like, "All right, cool. Everybody scores a point and I get that much closer to victory. I need to start stabbing people in the back around 3 or 4 planets."
Yeah. I mean, it's valid, you know.
But that's the thing. You also know that eventually you're going to hit that 3 to 4 planet threshold where people are going to be like, "I can't afford to negotiate and trade a planet with you. You're going to win."
Right.
Unless you both happen to have 4, and then there are co-wins, which is one of my favorite bits.
Which is how the game ended. The second game ended between us. That was great.
Yeah. Okay.
So there can be co-wins, so you can, you know, finish negotiating out a bit and be like, "Cool, we take planet for planet. Done." For negotiating, you do technically have a timer. I think they say 60 seconds. My house rule's always kind of been about 2-ish minutes.
Just, by then, you should just don't make it too long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I give them a little extra time so that if somebody's trying to be stubborn and or happens to be just trying to get that little extra out of it, go for it. I'm all right with that.
So, like, what kind of stuff can you negotiate? So it's not just like I get a planet, you get a planet, you can like...
Yeah. So say I'm up on planet, you know, I'm at 4 planets or something, you're at 3, and you're trying to get caught up with me. We enter into a negotiation, and I'm like, planet for planet, and you're like, no.
No.
I can be like, "Okay, well, do you have..." So every alien's got a flare card, and that's kind of how you pick your alien to begin with, is you're dealt 2 flare cards. I can look at you and be like, "Do you have my flare?" Because there's 2 halves to each one. There's a wild flare, meaning if you... And essentially, the flares are supposed to be...
It's like a special ability that focuses on your team's kind of a theme.
I'm thinking of it's kind of like the All Spark.
Okay.
But for specifically that race, essentially. And if you don't have it, you can use X effect because you only have access from the outside. Whereas if you are that race, there's normally a really cool extra bonus to whatever you can do.
Okay.
Like gamblers, I think if you have gambler's flare, whatever card you put out to negotiate with, you can take it back.
Ooh.
So that you can just it makes it harder for people to know what you do and do not have in your hand, which is really fun. Virus, I think it allows me to count my ships as even more or something
nice.
Like that.
Okay.
But
so there's more to negotiating than just planet for planet kind of stuff.
I could be super in the tank with my ships. Like I've failed a few encounters and your ships die and go to a place called the warp. And I could be like, "Hey, you know what? I'm 90% sure you have the last Mobius tubes, which sets all the ships free from it. I will give you a planet if you're willing to give me an extra card and play Mobius tubes or give me Mobius tubes." And be like, "Okay, cool. You get your planet. I get this. Now my ships are back in play and I can go back to actually really making a push instead of being on the defensive a little bit more."
All right.
And so, oh my God, I love this game.
No, that's really dope. I've been like... Like, it sounds super fun, and I'm just trying to get into the gritty mechanics of, like...
Yeah, and so, and then from there on, if I win, I can take a second encounter. Mm-hmm. If I lose, I have to pass it to my next player.
Okay.
And so, and then they draw from the Destiny deck, wash, rinse, repeat the cycle.
And then obviously alliances can rise and fall as easily as alliances in real life can rise and fall.
They are per engagement. You can choose to have them last longer than that. And I've had that happen with me.
So what happens if a negotiation just doesn't? Like, obviously, I don't think that that would happen in a group of, like, really good friends, necessarily. But, like, what happens if a negotiation just doesn't work?
Well, you know, sometimes I'm up by significantly more ships than you are, and that's your last planet with four ships on it. All ships go to the warp, and all cards that were played are discarded. And essentially, that's just everybody loses. Done. Everybody goes to the warp. Everybody dies. Nobody gets anything. I think you have to give up a couple of cards even, I think. Like one or two cards out of your hand. I don't remember on that one quite necessarily, and I don't have a rule book on me.
So basically, it's in everybody's best interest to make negotiations work.
Yeah, unless you're, like I said, really high up on ships. You might have the Mobius tubes that guy's gonna now absolutely need. Who knows? You know, sometimes it's worth being like, no, I'm going to let you know right now, there's no negotiation we're going to come with. So you might as well just accept that everything's going to die. It's okay.
And then when you move your ships to other people's planets, can other people take the planets? Like, say I got a planet, one of your planets.
Yep.
Could George then attack that planet and take it from me?
No, so he doesn't take it from you. You guys actually begin to coexist on that planet.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I think at the same time, if there are somebody else's ships on that planet, they're effectively just innocent bystanders just watching the encounter happen while they're just, you know, hanging out on their vacation home.
Okay,
on the beach.
So like I'd be on that planet just like chilling out, and then all of a sudden you and George would go into battle about that planet.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, hey neighbor, what's up?
Exactly.
Friendly face.
Yeah, okay. And then somebody can be like, you could even be like, hey, I'm going to defend and try to get something out of Drew for this.
Like, hey, Drew, do you want to enter into an alliance?
You're allowed to take your ships off those other planets as well. As long as you leave one ship behind, it's considered in your control.
Okay, that's where I was also going, because like you have a limited number of ships.
Mm-hmm.
If you went out and put your ships in a bunch of different places and you didn't have any ships in your home system,
those are still considered your planets.
Okay.
They're essentially, your ships represent like your military might.
Okay.
Whereas your planets represent, this is where everybody else lives.
Yeah.
And so...
But that would put you at a disadvantage if somebody attacked your planets.
Yeah.
You'd be like, mm-hmm. Oh, I only have one ship here instead of four ships.
Exactly.
Whoops.
That's why you'll see a lot of players who've played for a bit, like, since you've got five and you can send four, they'll take four off of four different planets and put that out, and then take from the other planet with the odd numbered extra and do that again, and kind of work this back and forth kind of motion. And then if you're really lucky, you get a Mobius tubes or something like that happens, and you can kind of replenish what's on your colonies that you have.
Probably my favorite one to use, and those like interrupt style cards that you mentioned earlier, is, I can't remember, Cosmic Zap, I think. It's effectively like a counter for any ability. You can use it when somebody's ability would start, like for Kyle, to use the example that we've been mentioning, who got to be sneaky with his negotiation cards. If you had a Cosmic Zap, you could be like, no, Kyle, you have to do this normally. And you have to reveal your cards when everybody else does the turn.
Okay.
Kind of a thing.
Yeah. And then there's Card Zap on top of that, which is like, oh, he played Cosmic Zap. No, I Card Zap your Cosmic Zap. And now Kyle gets to play it normally. Little things like that.
Yeah.
So it's turn based, but you have things that allow you to act during other people's turns as well.
As long as you're part of the engagement. So if George is attacking you, I've joined in an alliance with him, and you're beating him by three or four cards, or by three or four points, there are reinforcement cards.
Okay.
So I can play those cards, or if your power's what doing it, I can play Cosmic Zap to push the matter.
But if you hadn't entered into an alliance, then you would just be like...
You pretty much sit there and
just
watch.
Like, okay, good luck, guys. Yep,
I chose not to help either one of you, so...
Cool, 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 cool.
And that's why generally taking an alliance is a good idea, whether that be, hey, you know, hey, on our next one, let's just negotiate. We do planet for planet. If you help me defend my planet system right here, you know, things like that. And so it can be like I said, it's a very political game where you can use just about anything that's going to happen to your advantage, seeing what the, you know, circumstances are and how charismatic you are.
Other than table rules, there's no reason you could not, you know, argue like, hey, if you give me any help with, you know, this encounter right here and ally with me, you know, I'll buy you lunch tomorrow.
Yeah, that's, I have seen that.
Yeah.
I bet.
I saw somebody get a beer out of it once.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. There you go.
You help me.
Be like, hey, I saw that book that you have on the hold shelf at work.
Like, you help me.
You help me win against George and I'll buy it.
Yeah, I've seen people be like, hey, I got the next beer and we can take a co-win if you help me with this. So that they don't just be like, no, I want a solo win or something like that. It's like, damn, now you're throwing a beer on top of a co-win?
Mm.
All right. But yeah, there's all sorts of things. There's exactly. There's every bit of advantage you can take
can
in that
I
game.
Can I interest you in a strawberry candy?
But that's part of why I like that game so much, is that...
Sitting there in a negotiation and be like, okay, I want a planet, and in return, I can't give you a planet because then you'll win, but, like, I have these really good little gummy candies. Yeah. I give you some gummy candy.
How about depending on who your opponent
seven
is?
Seven Haichus.
I trade you seven strawberry Haichus. Pink Starburst.
Oh, man.
The best Starburst.
The best
Those
Starburst.
Are the best Starburst.
Just like, I'll give you this really good card, also pink Starburst.
See, this is why playing with friends and family makes this game so much better, because with strangers, you'd be like, oh, but I probably shouldn't offer this stranger candy.
Hello, little child, would you like a piece of candy? I'll just pull out a Nimue and just be like, also an apple?
Mm-hmm,
just
mm-hmm.
Nope, you ever offer me an apple in a deal and I will quash it. I will willingly take the penalties for failed negotiations.
Note to self, offer Drew apples.
No.
I'm literally just going to show up to your place with like a bucket full of like Cosmic Crisp apples and just be like, ready, Drew, let's play.
I don't trust any of them.
This needs to be a bonus episode.
Just...
But
just smack the microphone.
Just smack it. I flail a lot. But yeah, this game has gone through this game is one of those few games that I've seen go through a lot of hands to pretty much end up in the hands of a big boy like usual.
I think Fantasy Flight these days.
It's in Fantasy Flight's hands at this point, which with what they're doing with it and seeing the 42nd anniversary edition that they helped produce and make it just kind of that little step extra, I'm really pleased by it. But it was almost a Parker Brothers game, which kind of glad that it isn't, because we don't tend to get a lot of that stuff through us. But the creator actually decided to go on and make Eon Productions. He decided, nope, I'm just going to produce it myself, whole nine yards, which the part that got me was this game's almost as old as my father.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was made in 1977, so it's just a few years shy of him.
Wow.
And yeah, that blew my brain, especially for how good it is. It's had some reworks through the years
and
stuff like that.
We're on fifth edition, you said, so...
Yeah, just revising the rules and making them... A lot of what they did was just make it far more clear-cut of what things did and what you should be expecting. Because then it ended up in West End Games for a while, and then it ended up in Mayfair Games, and then it's finally finished... Then it ended up in Avalon Hill, which that one kind of confuses me. Avalon Hill is one of those like super big tactical board game style things. And for how small this is, I guess this would be a great way to try to get people into the Avalon Hill kind of games. Like, it's got some small political intrigue and it's, you know, kind of fast compared to their 4 hour to 40 hour games.
Yeah, definitely.
And then, yeah, it ended up in Fantasy Flight's hands, which they've just ran with it. I think they're producing all six expansions at this point. They have their 42nd anniversary with it, and you can see like it influenced a lot of stuff that started coming out, which was the crazy thing to me. Like, a lot of people who made Arkham Horror happened to mention it as an inspiration for their game. The guys that made Talisman happened to mention it a couple of times in a few interviews with them. A few guys, Richard Garfield, happens to talk about how much he loves it, and I can now see a lot more of the influence that might have had on Magic.
Yeah,
because I didn't even think about it. Like, I read that and was like, And then I started thinking about Garfield's newest project, Keyforge, and it started making way more sense that might have been an influence to him. And then the last Dune game, like, not the newest one, but the first time that they made a Dune tabletop game, they were like, this has kind of helped inspire us to want to do this and actually get out there with this.
If that's the one I'm thinking of, the same guy that I played with years and years ago owns the original Avalon Hill bookshelf game copy of that Dune game.
No!
Yeah.
But yeah, like, that, the fact that it influenced so much stuff and that they now have a duos, they have, like I said, six expansions to it, and they just, oh, it's really crazy because in all the expansions, it adds more stuff. Like, I'm not talking just extra people and the extra powers. There's also extra card systems that get thrown in.
Nice.
So, like, rewards, hazards, teams. Like, being able to play just straight on teams. Being like, okay, there's now 8 players possible. You know, we can do teams of 4, essentially. Stations, and then more rewards.
So I'm just discovering as we're sitting here that about 5 years ago, they made an offshoot based on the same game system that just makes a lot of sense. There's a Game of Thrones version of this.
Oh, nice.
Oh, dude,
which
really?
Politics and different houses and things, like, yeah. It makes perfect sense to adapt it to that kind of thing. But yeah, so
I didn't even see that. That sounds super cool.
Yeah, Game of Thrones, if anybody's looking for it, it's called The Iron Throne.
Oh, I have seen that so many times downstairs.
Never realized that was an offshoot of Cosmic Encounter. That's pretty awesome.
That's super dope.
That's actually really neat.
And like you said, that makes a lot of sense for it. Like I said, like the Dune one, that one made a lot of sense to me because of all the houses and all the politics and that. But there were things like Talisman Arkham and Magic that I was like, I don't necessarily see this. And then looking at stuff at like their later renditions of these games and being like, oh... Okay, I can kind of see where this might have been a thing to help, like, inspire these guys into getting out there and actually getting their products out, which I like Talisman, and I know a lot of people who hate Talisman.
That one deserves to be went back and played again on my end, because I had a similar feeling towards it probably that I did to Cosmic Encounter, and it's just been so long that I should probably just give it another shot.
Did you get the Kingdom Hearts version?
I would.
I thought you did.
No,
You thought about it, but never pulled that trigger.
Yeah. I might one day.
Well, I mean, we've talked about it before.
I had the first edition.
On the show, like, your experience with a game the first time you play it really does color how you view the game. And sometimes playing with a group of people that aren't necessarily a bad group of people, but they're just not the right group of people to try that game for the first time with, it can really make it kind of leave a bad taste in your mouth, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've had that with some of the games that I enjoyed for years and then played with the wrong group of people and had it to the point I almost left some of my favorite games.
And that's unfortunate because, you know.
It happens.
Yeah.
I obviously haven't left them. I'm still addicted like everybody else. Gotta get that cardboard crack.
Magic.
So what, 42 years ago, God, that's around the, 70, 69, 70?
It was 77.
Okay.
It was first produced in 1977.
I can do math. Yeah.
I mean,
that was a few years ago, too, at this point, I think.
You're right.
Like, that was probably a decade almost at this point.
I wonder if they just fudged the number a little bit just to make it the 42nd edition, too.
It would not shock me at all. It would not shock me one bit.
Just making Douglas Adams proud. But yes.
Yeah, it was only 3 or 4 years ago
that
they must have produced it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which I think means Fantasy Flight must have had it for at least a decade at that point.
They've had it since 2008.
Okay. Cool. Oh, so yeah,
notes.
Just about. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go.
For once, I had actual helpful notes. Yeah, they have had it since 2008. Avalon had it for 8 years, from 2000 to 2008.
Nice.
Which was, like I said, I don't understand. They produce some weird small games that are super fun, but a lot of their games are just so massive that I was like, what are you doing?
I bet it was somebody at Avalon who really loved Cosmic Encounters, and they were like, no, we need to have this game. This should be our thing.
You know, they did.
Probably.
Now that I think about it, they also had Betrayal at House on the Hill, too, until the more recent property or company change, because they would be on the back of the box along with Wizards of the Coast. And, and now that whole deal is all shenanigans and changing hands, because we can't get Betrayal at House on the Hill right now. But...
Oh, is that why we've been out of it?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I keep recommending it to people and then being like, never mind.
Yeah. We have the Legacy version.
Yeah, come get that. I hear it's better. Anyway,
I don't know about better. It's different and it's amazing.
I want to play Betrayal Legacy.
I've heard it's just better because of that feeling of building up constantly.
Like, oh, yeah.
A lot of people have just been like, no, that added something that the first one, to these people at least that I talked with, that they were like, it kind of felt like it was missing some extra suspense, like pushing of urgency. Like, why do I care? Why do I not take the risky play and just see what happens? It's this one shot kind of a thing. And then once you kind of added in the legacy, they were like, oh, I care about my character this much more.
Did you guys, have you done an episode on Betrayal at House on the Hill?
Not yet.
Oh, that could be a good one.
I can talk about that first game that we ever played where we got the stupidest haunting in the entire haunting book.
Which one did you get?
I don't even remember. We managed to get the rope and something else, and it was this weird one where it flipped everything to where the person wasn't the betrayer. They were the only investigator left, and everyone else was the ghosts trying to get them.
Oh!
It was weird.
That sounds way more fun than the one I got.
It can be a mixed bag of a game, but it's one of my favorite ones. Anyways, I digress.
We got were-rats. That was not fair.
I like it.
That's just a weird tangent related to Avalon Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's totally one that we'll probably cover in the future, maybe in the relatively near-ish future, seeing how one of our projects goes. Speaking of projects, that's a good place to announce it is, you know, on the actual podcast where we're supposed to be doing it.
Oh, hey, yeah.
We've got our lovely Tiffany downstairs, who is head of our social media platforms, and she's sending out a call for an AMA.
Which is an Ask Me Anything, for those of you not up to date on the savvy technical side of the internet.
Yeah, but I'm not either. I'm just faking it until I make it, right?
I mean, same.
But we'll be taking questions on board games and
Card games and RPG games. Anything, really.
Anything that you really want to talk about. I play a crap ton of video games to the unhealthy proportions, so feel free to ask about those.
You're free to ask us personal questions. We might not answer them, but like, hey, if you want to know like what George's favorite color is, drop that on a post.
Blue, no green.
And off the bridge you go.
Yeah, all right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I won't play into the bit anymore.
But yeah, no, if you follow us on social media, just keep an eye out on those posts. If you do have a question that you want to ask us, even if it's something about a game that we've already covered that maybe we didn't answer a question that you had and you wanted more information.
Yeah, we can help clarify some rules. You know, we could always do a small bit of Judge John Hodgman, and you can bring us a rules case. I'll help answer it. You don't have to follow my advice, but I'll give you an opinion on it.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things is, how does this work? He says this way, they say that way. Well, let's get into it. How do the rules say? Let's get our facts. Let's make a ruling.
But yeah, if you guys want to participate a little more with the show, want to interact a little bit more with us, it's a great way to do it. We're super excited to be able to answer some questions about all of our favorite stuff.
Yeah, give us some good... You know, also maybe drop us a link on games you'd like to hear us talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Like, feel free to give us suggestions for games. There's thousands of them, and I try really hard to pick something every week, but it's eventually going to get dry, guys. The well is only so deep that I have.
It's okay. We'll just, in season two, we'll just generally talk about games forever.
No one particular game just arcs the whole way through.
Like, today we're going to talk about games that deal with space. Hey, look, we're talking about Cosmic Encounter.
It'll be the board game podcast equivalent of, you know, Goku powering up his Kamehameha or whatever the big, you know, blast is for, you know, five
episodes
straight.
We'll never get to the blast.
Yep. For the weirdest analogy that I could figure out to jam in there.
That's it. We'll do that the whole time, and then we'll do the last episodes on Big Eyes, Small Mouth.
I like it. I'm here for it. any final thoughts, guys, about the encounters of Cosmics?
You should give it a shot. And if you played it 6 or 7 years ago and you didn't have as fun of a time, play it with people that you like, and you might like it a lot more.
Yeah, play it with, and I don't mean this in any negative regards to my friends, play it with your slimier friends. Your friends who have no problem looking you in the face and lying to you about what they're going to do in this game, because go play with your rogues. If you play RPGs, go... pick anybody who's ever played a rogue and play with them. It'll be a lot more fun.
If you have taken us up on the recommendation to play the card game Coup, spelled COUP, and you really liked it, there's a really good chance you'll like Cosmic Encounter 2.
I was actually thinking that this whole episode, being like, this sounds a lot like Coup, but like more rules.
Expanded,
like expanded Coup. And then I was like, you know what would be really fun? If they did a Coup version of Cosmic Encounters, where they like set it in the world of Coup, and you had your ambassadors and your spies and everything, but you like...
You had to take over capitals or something.
Yeah, like you had to take over cities, but you could negotiate as a diplomat, or you could go in as an assassin and try and just take out their leadership.
That'd be a lot of fun.
Right?
That just makes me think of Greedfall. I've been playing that over the last few days, and oh my god, is that game Diplomat?
If we have any custom board game makers in the audience... Get it going. Talk to us. We'll figure it out.
No, let's figure it out.
Let's figure it out, guys.
We'll take it to Fantasy Flight. All right, folks, I think that that's going to do it for this week. We're going to close the cabinet, turn off all the starlight, and call it this week. We'll catch you folks next time.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening to The Game Cabinet at the AU Radio Podcast Network. If you're interested in any of the titles from today's episode, you can check out the link tree in the description to visit Adventures Underground at their online store to browse the selections or inquire about special orders. If you'd like to contact the show, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just check out that link tree in the description. Or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the awesome shows on AU Radio that you love by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Podcast Network. You can find us at patreon.com/ADV Underground. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us continue to create these shows, and soon, many more.
You've been listening to the AU Radio Podcast Network. Music is provided by CubbyPurplePlanet.com and BenSound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio is a production of Adventures Underground. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.